The Garrison Sector. That time,
I was at school around those days, and I didn't go to the Garrison. I went to Foundation, but ganja smoking wasn't a thing in that kind of way.
As I say, the Rastafarian movement was just coming to the island. They talk about Black history, Black history was now, dominant in those days. But what I'm saying is that as I walk, and then for those 4 years, right through Stagger High School, I smoked marijuana. Drop out of school at 14. So marijuana, right down into my late adult life, marijuana was the idol in my life. You know, I went to prison, and, I got involved in crime. And before any criminal activity, was smoke marijuana. You go on a job, and when you return, the first thing will be go and buy food or buy clothes with the proceeds from a criminal activity. But the first thing was marijuana. Go and buy an ounce of marijuana. And as I see young people across communities in Barbados engage in marijuana at that age, my heart goes out to them because I know that, when I was that age, they had CASA and these other agencies that would warn young people about the dangers of marijuana. So another quiet thing, Mr. Wickham, is that most of those promoters from Canada that is promoting medical marijuana is not telling the Caribbean islands about the high medical costs that Canada, the high mental health bill, or the arising in mental health bill in Canada after the introduction of medicinal marijuana planting. So there's going to be a lot of collateral damage from this, not just Barbados, but across the Caribbean as Caribbean islands governments get involved in marijuana. And this is medical marijuana, but their focus is not on the medical aspect of the marijuana, but on the financial gains. So in my personal opinion, the governments of the Caribbean are sacrificing the next generation on the altar of marijuana profit. And that's for me. And I know the dangers of marijuana because I was, as I told you, I got blindsided by marijuana. And many of our young people are also blindsided by marijuana, and much for generations to come, that'll be a problem. And it also undermined the work.
I got you. All right, go ahead. Finish your point.
One more point. The introduction of medical marijuana in the Caribbean is also undermining the work of the agencies like CASA and the others, who are having a hard time right now as it is trying to curb the use of marijuana among young people.
All right. I have some difficulties with a lot of things you said, sir, as you probably imagine. I don't claim to have had the level of exposure to ganja that you have had. So certainly you are able to speak better to that. But I do have several friends that have had that level of exposure. And in the same way you're telling me that ganja destroyed your life, basically, right? So I have known people who have been smoking marijuana throughout university, post-university, who've raised families and whatnot, and they're still smoking marijuana now. And they didn't end up like you. What do you think would account for the difference between those individuals? Right? And I can't name anybody. Yeah?
I understand that. The difference is is the structure. If you look at the all prison population, 99% of persons who are in prison are involved in marijuana use. Right?
Right. But sir, what I'm saying, let's not confuse issues, okay? And I'm saying to you, if it is that I can identify progressive persons in my society, right? Doctors, lawyers, accountants. I actually even know a priest that smokes ganja, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, I can't identify him, but I do.
I understand.
So I can identify these people who go to work, come home, have regular jobs, smoke the ganja, raise a family, they have parties on weekends to smoke the ganja and whatnot, and they live normal lives. But then there's you who is saying that from the time you started smoking ganja, you went off the rails. I think that when you see this difference, it tells me this. It tells me that the problem is not the product. The problem is the individual, right? I want to add to that something else, that I know a couple of people who have had extremely bad relationships with alcohol, right? I actually happen to know one gentleman who I had a lot of respect for that is no longer with us as a result of the abuse of alcohol. Just like you, started drinking alcohol early, alcohol to school, to university. Alcohol. No, but I'm saying that your thing was ganja. His thing was rum, right?
Right.
And he met his death because of rum, okay? I know of people in the case of Trinidad and Tobago. My first exposure to substance abuse was at a clinic in Trinidad and Tobago that I visited in the course of some research. And I discovered there were men there, you know, relatively decent men, you know, professionals in society and whatnot, whose lives were being wrecked as a result of the abuse of alcohol. They beat their wives, they abuse their children, you know, they can't live and function normally because of alcohol. But that's not the relationship that myself or other people who would drink alcohol occasionally have. What I'm saying to you, sir, is that whenever you run into, when you do social research like me, you run into difficulties when you start to assume that your experience is everybody's experience, right? I'm just saying to you that there is an issue beyond you or me in relation to this ganja thing. Because I'm saying to you, sir, that based on the research that I have done, we have a lot of violence associated, not with the smoking of marijuana, not with the consumption of it, but with the procurement of it. And in terms of research I did some time ago for the same NCSA, right? What it showed me was that a big part of the problem was not the consumption of the ganja. It was the procurement of the ganja. And that's where the violence came into being. And that's the same lesson that we learned from the prohibition period, that more damage was being caused by procuring alcohol illegally than was being caused by consuming the alcohol legally. And that's the reason that I am where I am. I'm not an advocate one way or the other, because as I said to you, it's not my thing. But I am saying that it is a dangerous precedent when you say, because you ran into difficulty with ganja at 12, everybody else is smoking ganja. Somebody just messaged me and told me that he'd been smoking ganja for years, right? And there's a person who works in a medical institution, you know? Okay. My point is that I think you need to be careful when you assume that your experience is other people's experience. And the whole idea of decriminalization has come about now because as a society, we are realizing every time we send someone to prison, every time we charge someone with illegal possession of ganja, or we send that person to prison, or we find that person and we give them a criminal record, it costs the society more, and it costs that person more than would be the case if we said to a person who has a desire to smoke a spliff occasionally, carry on and do it. Sir, if 30% of Barbadians are using ganja recreationally, and we are maintaining that it is an illegal item, we have a problem, because you can't lock up 30% of the population. You can't fine 30% of the population. You can't criminalize 30% of the population. That is a bigger problem to me as a society than the risk that you run if a person gets carried away and starts using it too early. And at any rate, the provisions would not affect you, because no one is suggesting that a 12-year-old should be smoking ganja or drinking rum.
I agree. Now, the thing is, right, you say that, you know, but if you look at the social track record, right, across the Caribbean, the number of young people, right, if you look at it from the social aspect, in the different households, like people from, inner city communities across the Caribbean, that really, really young people are involved in marijuana. Only a few percentage of those young people will make it into university. A majority of the others will be marginalized in terms of like their educational progression or development. Some of them might, you know, a majority of them end up in prison. And all right.
I personally think that the majority of those people get beaten out of the system more because of the 11 plus and less because of ganja. Because a lot of the people you are talking about, I agree with you, that a lot of people from lower socioeconomic bracket will not make it to university. Right, and a big part of the reason that they will not make it to university has nothing to do with ganja. Because even if you take ganja out of the equation, they get to university neither. Because there are non-tariff barriers in place. Sir, there are non-tariff barriers in place. I mean, I can't arrive at that. But sir, that's what's good for living. I'm a social researcher.
Okay, let me say to you, let me bring this, or put this forward to you, Mr. Wickham. If ganja is part of the equation in a young child's life, I tell ganja has become an idol. Look, it's a typical ganja smoke across the Caribbean. In the morning, you get it because it's a ganja spliff. Lunchtime, there's going to be a ganja spliff. In the evening, there's going to be a ganja spliff. And in between, you might meet a person, a friend, there's going to be a ganja spliff. So if young people, at, let's say around the 10, 11, or let's say 11 years going on up, are engaged in this habitual use of marijuana, it would take away from their, from the time that they would have to put into their studies. So like ganja would become, you know, an idol in their lives, you know, rather than the books. If you, you might have two young people in a community, in the inner city community. One, the parents don't allow that young child to be actively involved in, you know, keep a quite, keep a boundaries around that child or keep them in that bubble, if you want to say. And then you have another child who are exposed to ganja smoking and things. That child in the bubble, more than 50% of the time, liable to make it into university than the child who are exposed to these different vices.
Sir, I disagree with you. Sir, I disagree with you. A big part of the person that I am, a big part of the work that I do and the advocacy that I do tries to help us understand why it is that the average poor kid will not get to university and the average middle-class kid will, right? I spoke on this program on several occasions about learning disabilities, about dyslexia, about the learning disabilities that I have and the extent to which it will stop a child that does not have means from making it in life, okay? So, sir, there are factors. There are several factors. The same child you're talking about can be exposed to alcohol, and that can also play a factor in terms of the child's being distracted. If a child is interested in what they are learning, sir, I suspect that they will learn it. If a child is interested in agriculture, I suspect that they will go and they will learn about agriculture. A big part of the reason why children become distracted is because there's nothing happening at school that excites them. So as a result, they entertain themselves with other things, and sadly, ganja is one of those things that they entertain themselves with. I don't know if you understand where I'm going with it. I'm just saying that I believe that you are giving ganja too much prominence in terms of giving it responsibility for the fact that a child doesn't make it. And I agree with you that the majority of poor kids out there are not going to make it to university. They're not. But it is not just because of ganja. It is usually because of other things. And as I told you just now, one of the things that I think that has a bigger factor that contributes to their not getting ahead in life is the 11 plus exam. So if anything, that to me has more of an impact on a child's existence than the ganja, you know. And I think I understand where you're coming from, because I believe that you're assuming that everyone else's experience is yours. And I'm saying to you that that is not the case, because there are a lot of poor kids out there that wait, that smoke ganja, and they still manage to get through the system, but they've made something of themselves. And from what I understand about the way that marijuana works, a person who smokes it as habitually as you're suggesting that they smoke it isn't going to have an impact on them. Because half of the time, when you see someone who is smoking as regularly as that, the person's ability to function is not impaired. In the same way that I have a good friend that drinks alcohol regularly, just as you're talking, morning, noon, and night. And when you see the person functioning, they function normally because it doesn't have any effect on them, not the way they will have on me. So it is not a wonder drug. It's not a super drug. It is a drug. And sir, cheese is a drug. Chocolate is a drug. Ganja is a drug. Coffee is a drug. Alcohol is a drug. And for some reason, we have decided that ganja is to be treated differently. All I ask is for us to classify ganja no differently than we would classify alcohol, and we need to treat it in that. I think the problems that we are having as a society, the social problems, stem from the fact that the criminalization of ganja has created social problems that have gone above and beyond the problems that will be associated with consumption. And that's the reason that I've become an advocate. You know, okay, anyhow, I'll let you have the final word on this issue.
Right. Sir. Mr. Wickham, my final word is this, right? Like myself, who was blindsided by marijuana way back then, you're being blindsided also by the subtlety of this marijuana plant. Have a blessed day, sir.
All right, sir. Thank you for calling, and I appreciate hearing from you. Curtis Griffith tells me that I can call him a white rum drinker on air anytime, so I don't have to apologize. I was hoping that he may not have objected to me associating him with the white stuff as opposed to the brown stuff. So I'm happy to hear that. Cyprian is saying, please recap. Oh, I'll have to recap that separately at a different time. Don DeBrastax, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Not too bad. How are you doing?
Hey, good, man.
Oh, this is Wendell. How are you doing?
Hey, good, man. You were born real good till you get to the end. And you start to blame the 11 plus for all this ignorance that's going on. But anyway, we can do another thing.
Let me stick to the ganja then, if you want.
Let's stick to the ganja, because that's another topic. That's a favorite topic, but it takes too long. I call... Well, the first thing, when you talk about discrimination, and you talked about discrimination against people, gay people, let's call it that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that is a big issue in Barbados.
You don't think so?
Well, I have been dealing with all kinds of people, and I have not seen discrimination against gays as being a big thing in Barbados. No, I've worked in culture, worked in business, and I've not seen it as a big thing. I mean, there are bigger issues when it comes to discrimination that I'm worried about. I'm worried about discrimination in any form or fashion. When it comes to things that are legal, I have issues with people discriminating against people who are going about their merry way. They're not doing anything that is wrong that you can bring them to court for, and yet people want to discriminate against them.
Do tell, like what, sir?
Peter, let me get real. Yeah, let me start. They would deform the discrimination we have. Right? Mm-hmm. We have managerial discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
We have political discrimination. We have class discrimination. We have academic discrimination. And we are discriminating against all of these people. And you remembered very well what Dr. Law said. I thought it was crass. What he said was crass. Let me put it that way. But equally as crass, we said a minister, a current minister could get on a platform and promote elitism by saying that somebody has pedigree. And as you start to play with this pedigree, the underlying position is that certain people are undesirable because they have no pedigree. Their family were never in politics. Their family were never known to be great policemen or teachers or lawyers. That is the implication. And for somebody to come on your political platform to say that in 2021, I also found very repugnant. As a matter of fact, I think most of the discrimination we are getting now is discrimination of blacks versus black. For example, I've seen this before my very eyes. If you went to Combermere, or Carlmere as they call it, you would have a better chance of getting a job if a Carlmerian is the person who is making the decision. I've seen this right before my eyes. And I'm saying that the issue is that we should look to create a meritocracy, a society in which people would be recognized for what they can do, what they can contribute, instead of where they come from, in terms of the school they went to, in terms of where they live, in terms of when they went to church or if they didn't go to church. Because, you know, there was this discrimination years back when if you didn't go to the Anglican church, you could not get a job in a primary school. My father was a primary school teacher, Water Street, Christchurch Boys School. And because he didn't belong to the Anglican church, he had to leave that job and went on to do his own school when we're back school, and then he made it where. And so I'm saying that this
Wendell, discrimination. Wendell, I want to, and I am not disagreeing. I want to engage you on the issue, and I want to say firstly that I agree with you entirely that we need to. Barbados needs to become a society in which discrimination is unpopular and unattractive, right?
Yes.
I want to take issue with you because I want to get into this discrimination thing because I have some research here to share with you. I want to get into this issue of this whole question of pedigree, and I want to just challenge you on it because I heard a comment. I know the individual who made the comment well. I know that she is not a person who engages in any form of discrimination. She is definitely not cut from the same cloth as Dr. Lowe. And she went to school the same place as you and me, right? So coming out of that institution, naturally she would. Coming out of that institution, she would have to have some kind of pedigree. Agree?
No, I'm not agreeing with you.
No, I am going. You know why I'm going there, Wendell? I am saying that I think that we use the word pedigree very creatively in Barbados. I remember years ago, I was referred to as a person that has journalistic pedigree. And the reason I have journalistic pedigree was because my grandfather was a journalist and my uncle was a journalist after my grandfather. So I came into the system with the expectation that I had journalistic pedigree. Right? Someone wrote that in a newspaper article about me, that Wickham has come to the fore with journalistic pedigree. Okay? I have heard references to situations where you have a father-son and one of them plays cricket. And the son plays cricket, as suggesting that you must have some kind of cricketing pedigree because your father played cricket and you played cricket. Okay?
I had an uncle...
I had an uncle called Bomber Wickham, right? And Bomber Wickham was an outstanding athlete. He went to Common Mirror, unfortunately. He didn't go to foundation like us. So that pedigree he lost. But he was an outstanding athlete and runner. And I have heard people say, you know, Wickham, you are a disappointment to that family because you can't run fast because clearly the pedigree wasn't handed down. The point I'm making to you is that I think that there was a rush to judgment in relation to the comments that Santia made, where she was talking about pedigree in a way that was entirely flattering. The idea of having political pedigree doesn't mean that it is any mark of excellence that's assigned to you because you come up with a degree or whatnot, because to the best of my knowledge, her father had none. But the point is that she has political pedigree because she came from a family of people who were engaged in politics. In the same way that if his son played cricket, His son will be told that he comes from a line of cricketers and there's cricketing pedigree in that regard. So all I'm saying is, let's not get hung up on the use of the word pedigree, because I did not see anything wrong with it and I still don't see anything wrong with it because there's pedigree in cricketing. Anyhow, let me move on to this whole question of discrimination, right? And let me just say to you that I completed some research recently for the government. HIV/AIDS Commission. And we asked people about the acceptability of treating people differently on the basis of certain criteria, right? We found that we asked people about race, gender, age, sexual orientation, religion, and political affiliation. And we found that in Barbados in 2019, 24% of people said it was acceptable to treat people differently on the basis of age. 19% of people said it was acceptable to treat people differently on the basis of sexual orientation. 13% said sexual 19.
Yeah,
13%
okay.
said religion. 12% said sexual orientation. Political affiliation. 15% said gender, and 13% race. Based on those numbers, race and religious discrimination are the least of our problems. The biggest problem we have is age discrimination, and I know you know just as well as I do, that is a huge problem in Barbados where old people are discriminated against. Yeah, We did not include in that list size discrimination. Because I am sure if we introduce the concept of discrimination on the basis of well, I don't know, you call it bigness? What do you call it? Obesity? that would be a big problem as well, because that is the basis of a lot of discrimination that takes place in Barbados. So I am saying
sure
that if this is an opportunity
people.
For us to engage in it, man, no, some people like big people, but some people discriminate against big people.
They will say you're too bony.
Well, precisely, but then there are others that look at it in that way. So this data tells me that we do have a problem in Barbados. And I'm not gonna get into a debate as whether or not Dennis Lowe was this or not. However, I'm just saying that there is a problem where you have more than 10% of Barbadians that believe that discrimination is acceptable, and it is unacceptable.
Yes. We agreed on that, Peter.
All to you.
Stop this discrimination and try to aim for a meritocracy. It is about time that we got there, because we have been fighting for years to get the black man recognized, and now the black man is recognized. We're fighting among ourselves. And this is discrimination thing. I don't want to dig in too deep, that's everything I should be saying, right? But I've also seen is discrimination played out, where people will say, this body too old, so therefore they're listening to them. Them is old people, we lose a lot of experience. Simply because somebody is saying, well, them too old. And the figure that you get old when you hit 60. So you soon get old, Peter.
By old already. You old already. I old already.
No, man, when you get to 60, you'll be really old.
Yeah. No problem. But Wendell, I want to thank you for calling and for introducing the issue. As I said, I think that we disagreed on some points, but generally speaking, I do support the idea that this opportunity, this incident provides us the opportunity to look at discrimination in a broader context and to basically say that, yes, as Barbadians, we have some issues that we need to develop, because we need to become a meritocracy. And I agree with you that when we get to a situation where any of those factors can be used as a basis, I am better than you, I'm an Anglican and I'm better than you, or because I'm an Anglican, I'm better than you, we have a problem. We really do have a problem. Thanks a lot for calling, man. We're going to have to run. Down to Brass Tacks, we'll be right back. Back to Down to Brass Tacks. Peter, I have a huge problem. I'm working remotely and my two children are at home with me doing schoolwork, but we are struggling badly to concentrate and be productive because of the loud music that is blaring from the house across the street. The person isn't the only one in the village who plays music day and night at unbearably high and disruptive levels. It's booming in my house and I am at my wit's end. Repeated calls to District F Police Station have brought no serious intervention. Government needs to move swiftly to curb this public nuisance, particularly if they're asking people to work from home. I need this problem addressed right away. I'm sure that we're not the only ones suffering in this way during lockdown. What course of action can be taken for immediate solution? Sir, I really don't know what to tell you. I really wish there was a course of action that I could recommend, but I imagine it would be very annoying for you and the people with the kites, and I feel your pain. That's all I can tell you. I really do feel your pain. People need to become more understanding and reasonable to assist their neighbors, because we all have to share this space. Troy, all the best to you. I'm happy that you are able to enjoy your white rum, which you say is the best of the best. During this period of lockdown. I'm happy that this time around, there has been no ban placed on the consumption of alcohol for persons like yourself and myself. Dr. Brastax, good morning.
Mr. Wickham, good afternoon.
Sorry, this morning. Morning, Uncle Mark. How are you doing?
Pretty well. Since you are a connoisseur on drugs, or what you would call it, I have a problem and I need you to answer it. Mm-hmm. I was listening to Radio Jamaica a couple of days ago. I said a day ago. And the president of the Jamaica Ganja Growers Association, he started out by saying in a clip that when you talk about ganja, you talk about Jamaica. Jamaica is the home of ganja. He went on to mention that the cost of ganja has fallen off in Jamaica in relation to the wholesale purchase. Now, I have heard you refer to this movement in several ways. You call it ganja, you call it marijuana, you call it cannabis, you call it everything. What is it? What is the real thing of this? Since the reason I'm asking is that since we have to, or surely we have a Caribbean Growers Association of this product. What is the right name?